What would cause a person to leave their career, their path to financial gain and normal human life, to go on a different path? A path of spirituality. Up next, David Cereda joins us. I think he's got the answers. David Cereda's first aspiration in life was to become an astronaut in 1968. He and a friend witnessed a UFO along with hundreds of other witnesses. After this experience, David grew up as a UFO enthusiast, never living in doubt of the phenomena that has swept the world since the Roswell incident of 1947. His interest in space, religion, philosophy, astronomy, science led him on his career in related fields, and he has studied world religion, science, physics, paranormal psychology for more than 25 years, and here he is back on Coast to Coast. Hello, David. How are you?
Hello, George. Good evening. It's been a long time.
It has. It's always a pleasure. What have you been doing since our last discussion?
I've just gone right into producing the new film that we're talking about tonight, The Voice, right away since the release of my last film, From Here to Andromeda. And I got married and moved to Sedona, Arizona.
Well, you did two good things there, David.
Yeah.
In that order. This movie that you've been working on, it's a dream come true for you, isn't it?
It really is, because for me, the spiritual is actually a deeper passion of mine than the UFO phenomena. I mean, my father, introducing me to the spiritual path while he was getting his PhD at Berkeley in the 1960s in psychology, is kind of was the driving force behind myself and my brothers to really start wanting to have real spiritual experiences of our own, like our father was having. So it kind of drove us. And, for 30 years now, on a daily basis, I've done everything from intensive meditation practice to therapeutic and healing technologies to breath therapies to psycho-emotional release therapies. I mean, I've done virtually everything there is to deepen my own experience. But along the way, I've met so many fantastic teachers from India, from Europe, from the Americas, and I really feel that making a film about that process and giving people access to how teachers that can help them have and deepen their own experience on their way to enlightenment is what this is all about. And it's really amazing. I mean, since the end of the Cold War in 1991, little do most people know that a lot of Russian scientists converted to peaceful research, and so did a lot of American scientists who were out of work, and they started exploring consciousness for decades. And now a lot of their work is coming to fruition, and they're starting to scientifically prove and verify exactly what all these enlightened masters have been talking about. And through my own experiences, tonight I hope to give people the deepest vision, and also in the film The Voice, of what true and authentic enlightenment really is.
With this enlightenment, David, does it give you the ability to fight these dark sides that keep coming at us?
Well, ultimately, I mean, to really understand what full enlightenment is, I have not attained the full level. In fact, when I was in India, the Dalai Lama told everybody when I was studying with him in 1996 that he's not enlightened. And he says that humbly to the truth of what full nirvana actually means for the Buddhist and what, full realization truly means in all religions. And when you really get a picture of what it's like to go into these very, very deep states of consciousness, from concentration to meditation to six or seven levels of samadhi to three levels of nirvana, when you really see what it is, it's massive what our potential really is. And what's really exciting is science is starting to verify what I call these nine rings, the nine rings going from the first six stages of samadhi and then into the three nirvanas. Science is actually verifying that these fields, these massive fields that extend far beyond the human aura's experience of reality, actually exist. And they're also starting to see that the universe is conscious with or without human beings. There's an actual consciousness that they can now measure. And for me, merging the science and spirituality together, on behalf of that kind of goal to want to prove to the disbeliever that this is all really real. I mean, you can have a spiritual experience, and I'll talk about some of my experiences tonight, but when you have science to back it up, to prove that you're not imagining this stuff, that even Einstein, he said, everyone who is seriously involved in the pursuit of science becomes convinced that a spirit is manifest in the laws of the universe, a spirit vastly superior to that of man. So what proof did Einstein see that gave him the evidence to see that this universe is alive? There's a living intelligence here that's happening, and that's kind of the goal or the motto of the film, The Voice.
Well, and you can tell just by talking to you, David, how this has affected your life.
It's completely affected my life. In fact, it just turns you upside down. I mean, in the 1970s, the early 70s, my father, Lynn Sarita, dragged, you know, me to this yoga retreat with this guru from India, and we're all, you know, baptized Catholic, and we were not really practicing. But my dad was like, you have to have this experience. You have to meet this guru named Baba Haridas. And I just wanted to play baseball with my friends, and he forced me into the van, and he drove me off by myself, left all my brothers behind. And I meet this spiritual teacher, and in the middle of the night, this was the first experience I ever had. I had this, what people call sleep paralysis. My body was, I was sleeping in a tent. I was just a young boy, probably 13, 14 years old, and my body became paralyzed one stage at a time, my arms, my legs, and then my neck. I remember when my neck got paralyzed, I was really terrified that this was like something terrible happening to me. But for some reason, I didn't have much fear, and I just relaxed into this space. And all of a sudden, these three beings, whom I had never seen a picture of before and who were very well known in Hindu mythology, appeared in this blaze of blue light. It was Rama, Sita, and Hanuman, the half-human, half-monkey god. And they were so powerful and shining in front of me. I fell on the ground, and I told the guru the next morning I was really excited, and he laughed, and he said, oh, that was Hanuman and Rama and Sita. And I didn't even know who they were. But when you have an experience like that, you really get it at an early age that there's something way beyond what we normally experience. And I just wanted to know more. And it took me till the time I was 18 to be meditating every single day, sitting and practicing in the meditation posture on a daily basis without fail. And things just got more and more intense, you know, over the years. You know, experiences start happening.
Did the guru seem to expect you to have this visitation?
No. In fact, I think he was very surprised because a lot of the, you know, yoga students who come to these retreats, you know, these gurus teach of this enlightenment and that you're going to experience bliss and you're going to transcend suffering. And even now we consider how many people are taking antidepressants, how many people are depressed. It's literally in the tens of millions of people who are clinically depressed, and then there's many more who are, you know, not even taking medication for their depression.
And this is that time of year too, David.
Yeah,
where a lot of people get really down.
And it really, you know, it beckons you to want to deepen, you know, yourself. And how do you commune with this higher self? What motivates the saints? I mean, to strip themselves of everything, to go on this path. And so many people think, oh, heaven is probably a boring place, and the saints are poor, and they're probably so bored. When you really get into this stuff, these people are the most blissed out, most unbelievably cosmic mind individuals that ever existed. And when you start to have your own experience of that, and some of mine literally got explosive after 7 years of intense practice. It's, you go, oh my God, this is the thing to be doing. The thing to be doing is to go deeper and deeper into this, to find out what is consciousness. What, you know, how does this happen? Where you can have supernovas of explosions of ecstasy and have your aura merge all the way out into the cosmos, like, you know, what happened to Dante Alighieri. What happened to Buddha, you know? What is the experience of enlightenment? And I've seen, you know, there's a lot of films on the general concept of oneness. I found there were too many films about the genocide against the Tibetans and the crimes against the Native Indians. I wanted to get...
That was like documentary style, wasn't it?
Right. You know, I wanted to show people in a film, what is it like to be in these stages? And what, you know, what are these people experiencing? And how can they have the same experience? And on top of all of that, the scientific evidence that it's all real. And that is, it's been a year journey, you know, interviewing people and traveling and documenting and really kind of doing a lot of visual effects in this film to really show people and give them that experience as they're watching it.
What's the overall concept of The Voice?
Well, the overall concept is to explore all world religions and non-religions and science and the view of even the Gnostics and the agnostic who believes in a higher force. In fact, most of the opinion polls suggest that most Americans believe in the personal God. I mean, you know, it's just a documented fact that Christianity is the largest religion in the world. But an amazing amount of Americans, almost 40%, are dissatisfied with religion. And the reason they're dissatisfied is because either their understanding of it isn't deep enough or their own experience of the religion or spirituality isn't deep enough. And they want to know more. They want to have a deeper experience. In fact, one of the stories I document in the film is the story of Father Thomas Merton, if you know the name.
Mm-hmm.
And Merton was a Catholic Trappist, very, very strict monk who started to experience enlightenment. But he became interested in Hinduism and Buddhism to try to see if he could deepen his experience of the Christian mystic state. And he goes to India in 1967. And I actually interviewed a monk, a Buddhist monk who met him. And he gives this incredible speech after having viewed and met with the Dalai Lama and a lot of the Zen masters and Hindu enlightened teachers. And he actually believed that they were in a deeper state of God realization than a lot of most of the Catholic Trappists. And that was an iconoclasm against the church. And here he is speaking in this conference in Thailand in 1968 about how important it is to start studying each other so we can all deepen our experience of enlightenment. And they find him dead in his hotel room just after the speech. Now, since he died, whether it was a murder or not, nobody's saying, but, you know, you can suspect that. The Buddhist-Catholic dialogue, this is not well known to Christians, is in full force today. In fact, I actually interviewed Buddhist scholars like Bhante Piyananda in the film The Voice about that process that's going on in the church, and he gave me very high-ranking members in the Catholic Church to interview as well, who are admitting that this has been going on for a long time. In fact, they even do meditation retreats together. So peace between religions is something that's an inside secret, that they really do understand each other on a very deep level, but people just don't realize that this is happening. And for me, it was Buddhist meditation. I practice Vipassana, sometimes on retreats, 12 hours of sitting per day for 10-day retreats. I did, you know, intensive rebirthing retreats throughout my life. And through my Buddhist practice, I started having Christian mystic experiences, which is really interesting. And that's kind of what attracted me to Thomas Merton and studying his life story. So what we're seeing in this film is a synthesis from mystic Judaism to the mystic Islam to the mystic Christianity to the agnostic and even to the atheist, who can look, if you can really look at the scientific data, what we're finding is there is proof of what are called the greater and greater auric fields or fields of life force energy. In fact, a physicist from St. Petersburg in Russia, Konstantin Korotkov, I don't know if you've heard of this,
has
developed the world's first 3D human aura imaging camera and software. Not like a Kirlian image where you just see a picture of the colors of your aura,
right,
but the entire aura in 3D in such amazing detail.
What does it look like in 3D?
It's incredible. You can zoom in on your spleen and see how much energy is coming out of your spleen. It can measure the amplitude of energy coming out of all seven of your vital energy centers or chakras. And what we did is we took this machine and we did before and after three different types of meditation. We measured five different meditators' auras in the film before to establish a baseline.
Okay.
And then we did, you know, long meditations, not like five-minute little meditations. We did a 45-minute vigorous pranayama or breathing meditation, and then we did chanting the mantra Om for 30 minutes, and then we did a two-and-a-half-hour insight meditation. And simultaneously to measuring all of our auras before and after, we put a glass of water in front of us, which we didn't think about the water. We just put it there. And Krishna Madhapa, an East Indian mystic physicist who works with Konstantin Korotkov in America, he took water samples before and after the meditation to see if our consciousness was going to affect the water before and after. Very similar to Isaro Emoto's experiments, except this time we're not looking at frozen water crystals. We're looking at actual information in the water. And what the machine does, it's called the GDV.
How big is it, David? To describe
it's very
what it looks
small.
Like.
It just fits in a laptop, and it has this camera that takes biophoton readings. And before I go further, biophotons are biological light rays that are coming off of our body all the time. It takes readings off of all 10 finger tips.
Fantastic.
And transposes it into the entire human organism in 3D so it can measure your physical aura as well as your spiritual aura, and it can show you when your seven energy centers are in a physical space or in an emotional space or in the center, as well as how much energy is coming out of each chakra, including how they're talking to each other. And what's amazing about this technology is that it gets all of your information about, let's say, George Norrie puts his hands on this camera, mm-hmm. all of your information, emotionally, physically, and even about your health is recorded and carried like a radio signal in your biophotons, which opens up the door for scientific proof on life after death, how the light body actually carries all of your memories, pictures, information, how it's actually scientifically feasible to prove the case for reincarnation or just another incarnation, whether it happens in a heaven dimension or a paradise dimension. It actually shows that your information is encoded in the light waves that are coming off of your body, which is really spectacular.
What a piece of machinery. How much does it cost?
These machines are about $10,000, and they'll actually train you. There's very few of them in America, and there's very few people who know how to run them. But one of the things that happened, like, this is really amazing. My wife, Crystal, when she was doing the chanting of the mantra Om, she had this beautiful vision in her third eye. I mean, her third eye, you know, started, which is, you know, the space between the eyebrows, these incredible visions of going above the clouds and meeting these beings. And when we measure Crystal before and after the meditation, her third eye was this huge blue full moon in her head, meaning the amplitude of energy coming out of her third eye could actually be measured on the GDV machine.
That's incredible. So, David, if someone, let's say they were having just a wonderful day and their mm-hmm. attitude was positive and everything, and you took these 3D images, and then maybe the next day life wasn't as good, and you did the same thing, the same imaging, would you see a difference?
Well, you see a difference minute by minute. I mean, we even did readings over a time value of like seven readings over a one-minute period, and you can see amazing changes. Like for me, when I did the 45-minute vigorous breathing meditation, I thought, oh, my chakras are going to be huge, right? They're going to be like, because I'm so lit up. And they were small, and my wife's were huge. And I was like, oh, my God, I've been meditating 30 years. This is so humiliating. But then when I did the two-and-a-half-hour sitting, my chakras got huge, massive, like full moons, and I had a mystical experience, and the machine measured that experience, and I'll tell you what that is when I can hear the music.
Right
so.
I love it, David. You know the format. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, as we kick up the holiday season, our special guest tonight, David Sirita, we're going to be back with Dave in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we're back with David Sirita. David, we won't dwell too much more on this camera, but the people who have different moods and emotions, it picks up almost instantly then, you're saying?
It picks up virtually everything in all seven of your energy centers. It can see when one of your centers is, you know, is really in a struggle, when it's not balanced. It's really an amazing piece of technology because it's the person who invented it, who has three PhDs in Russia, Konstantin Korotkov, had a near-death experience, and he wanted to prove it. And it's kind of like that, you know, that challenge that you have an experience and you can't tell anybody how amazing this experience is, but if you can prove it, maybe more of them will believe you. And it's starting to happen. You know, we interviewed Dr. Roger Nelson at the Princeton Global Consciousness Project, the director, and they're now convinced that the Earth has a conscious new sphere, an actual sphere or ring of consciousness around the planet that has precognitive abilities. I mean,
that's amazing.
So what I'm doing in the film is I'm teaching people to see both the particle in the field of atoms, of plants and animals, and the human aura, and how it extends beyond the body. And then you get into the new sphere of the Earth, and then you get into a solar system kind of field or brain, and then you get into these galactic levels or rings of consciousness. So what happens in meditation is ultimately, when we get to these super expanded states of consciousness, our field starts to merge with fields of consciousness that already exist. But when you tap into them, you get to feel that entire brain of consciousness. And that's what I think started to happen to people like Einstein and many of the saints, that's how they got their direct knowledge. Because you get tremendous ecstasy. I mean, tremendous peace, tremendous joy, but you also get this direct knowledge. And one of the things you're starting to see in real information that's stored in biophotons, real information like pictures and voices, which we're speaking on now, the radio, we're carrying our voice on photons, radio waves. What's starting to happen now is scientists are able to tap into that. The yogis in ancient India say that if you were, for example, to be in a very advanced stage of samadhi, which is beneath nirvana, and you look at a tree, the atoms in that tree can tell you the history of everything that happened around it, which would mean if you went to the elm trees, you know, on Elm Street where Kennedy was assassinated, those trees have the real history of that event stored in them. So they know the real truth. And what this means is ultimately that there will be a technology that will allow us to view any event in history. This is coming probably in the next 100 years with total accuracy. You could know with certainty anything that actually happened by recording information off of, you know, biophotons coming off of living organisms virtually anywhere on the planet. In fact, you could go back to Jerusalem and you could see the time of Muhammad, of Jesus Christ, of many of the Jewish mystics there, and you could know exactly what the words that were spoken. And
this it's almost like time travel, David.
It's a power that is so terrifying. I mean, it is literally, it's written in the book of Enoch, and Enoch is the first prophet in the Bible, very close to the Garden of Eden, that when we took in the knowledge of good and evil and we lost singularity, then we went into the dual consciousness field, we lost direct access to true knowledge, and they derided or ridiculed us having to write down our history as an inferior form of archiving knowledge. And that is exactly what this is. This is showing us what is actually possible, that you can have the truth. You don't need to go to a court case. You don't have to rely on an altered, you know, story or an inaccurate perception of history. You can know exactly what happened at any time. And, you know, what an incredible movie that would be just to portray that kind of technology. But that's where this research is going. In about 1981, during a Buddhist retreat, you know, about 10 hours a day of practice at my father's house, I went into one of the stages of samadhi, which is beyond meditation. And what happens in samadhi is most of your consciousness, and this is very consistent with Buddhist masters I interviewed in the film and people from different traditions, mm-hmm. most of your consciousness goes beyond the body. You can move your toes and you can walk, but you enter these universal fields. And I walked outside because I had this explosion of light ecstasy that started in my belly after hours and hours and hours of painful meditation. And when I went outside, I could hear the sounds of every plant, every blade of grass, even rocks were making sounds that blended into the symphony of Om. When the wind blew through the willow trees, I just started laughing because it was tickling me. There was this supernatural ecstasy in the trees, and when the wind blew on them, it was touching me. I was the field that was caressing the trees. I could feel the trees like I can feel my own toes. And I looked up into the sun, and I went, oh my God, the sun is making this incredible sound, a really high-pitched frequency and a very deep, low hum. And it's not that my human ear was hearing the sound. The field was hearing it. And what I did when I was editing in the film, I searched, you know, scientists hear the sound of the sun. And sure enough, over several decades later, which is only in the past couple of years, NASA has taken the inaudible, just beneath the range of the human ear, sound of the sun, and they've compressed the waves so you can actually hear it. And it's a whopping sound.
It is. We've played it, I think. We've had clips on the program of that.
Yeah, and that is what Pythagoras called also the music of the spheres, that when if you purified your senses, you could enter these expanded states of consciousness, and you could hear the music that all of the stars and all of the planets were making. And so that's just what starts to happen. That was just, for me, kind of the beginning. In December 22nd and 23rd of 1996, which are the two most spectacular days of my life, this is really going to be a vision or a picture of what part of the whole enlightenment is about. I went into this state where I felt like I was dying. It was like a near-death experience, but there was physically nothing wrong with me. A psychologist, William James, would call it vastation. And I had been meditating every day for 7 years at this point, so it's a very long time of practice. And what happened is I thought I was dying. I lied down at 4:15 in the afternoon, which is the time of day I was born, December 22nd, 1986. Mm-hmm. And I just this, to make a long story shorter, a man appeared to me and he said in a vision, "Do you want to see an angel?" And the second I said yes, there was a shower of white light, an explosion of ecstasy that is beyond anything I've ever, like a thousand million times greater than the greatest human experience I'd ever had. And I was lifted above the city of Vancouver, Canada at that time. And I was racing towards the center of our galaxy at an amazing, amazing speed. And I ended up going through a total of six clear light spheres of consciousness that were massive, I mean, utterly massive in size. And the innocence, the love, the ecstasy, the peace, the power, the beauty in this, I heard this overwhelming sound of angels singing louder than thunder. It would destroy the human ear to hear these sounds. And the sounds I heard, even in the first heaven, when I was in the first clear light heaven, the sounds I could hear were causing the planets and the stars in the galaxy to turn and spin and cause their orbits. In fact, many years later, when I read Jamie James' Music of the Spheres, he describes how Thomas Aquinas said that when he wrote to a friend that the celestial bodies are moved by spiritual beings, and he cannot think of one philosopher or saint who would have denied it. And even Dante, when he's going and he visits the sun, when he was beyond his body and he's going into the sun, he hears the music of the cosmos, and he actually meets Thomas Aquinas in the sun. And then what happens is I go into, there's this membrane where there's so much ecstasy. If you can imagine, so much joy that it's crushing you. It's torrential how much beautiful ecstasy there is. And there's beautiful angels singing, and I go into the second heaven where all of those qualities multiply another million times. So the ecstasy becomes exponentially huge, just going from one heaven to another. And I look down at my body, and I was like, I was human. And I could point my fingers at stars and planets in the distant universe, and I could see through my fingertips, through my hands, through my feet, and I could zoom in on any part of the universe I wanted to. And I was told by the light that in the second heaven and the first, there were millions of paradise planets inside of the bodies of these heaven dimensions. And it seemed like I was racing towards the center of the galaxy, and the angel singing got louder. I was moving at superluminal speeds, and I went into the third, and the third was a million times the second. And the levels of ecstasy, when I was in the third heaven, I started to doubt all gurus, all spiritual masters on earth, and that how could...
Why doubt?
I doubted that they could take one step physically, because you'd be so overwhelmed with bliss that how could you even utter a word? Now, I know they go into these states, and I know that what happens is eventually I go into the fourth, which is unspeakable. The field of consciousness that I was entered into was thousands of light years across. I could see it. I was no longer a human physical form. I was this massive field beyond the size of millions of suns. And I was begging God to stop because the ecstasy was just torrential. I mean, way beyond your wildest dreams. And this is only the fourth. And there are actually a total of nine of these, and they're exponential. The ecstasy and the love and the peace, and there's qualities that are unnameable. You can't even name them. And I go into the fifth, and I beg God to stop. I said, please stop. I can't take any more of this. This is way too huge. And then it is simply unspeakable what you experience there. And then I go into the sixth. And then I read, which, again, everything multiplies another million times. I can't even believe this is happening to me. And then I see the edge of the seventh, and something tells me if you cross this point, you can't come back. And the desire to come back and to tell everybody that this...
What do you mean you can't come back?
I don't know. Somehow I saw that I wasn't just... You see, you go into oneness even in the first sphere of enlightenment or heaven. But there are deeper and deeper levels of this unified field, of this singularity. And it just, it's beyond our wildest dreams. And I wanted to come back and say, everybody, this is real. It's really worth it to live a good life. It's really worth it to attain this. And any of the saints who attained it, believe me, they're not bored. The first heaven alone would extinguish all of the depression in the entire world. Nobody could be depressed. You could never get bored there because everything is suspended in this consciousness that's so spectacular and beautiful. I mean, there's just no way to get bored. And then what happens is when I got to the sixth, I said, I can't cross this point because something told me that physically I would become as big as the galaxy, and I just couldn't bear it. I just said, oh, my God, this is way beyond my ability. So I turn back. I come into my body. I retain 0% of the bliss of the consciousness, and I was devastated. It was like someone just turned out the brightest light in the universe, and I'm human again. And I went, oh, my God, what happened? It's all gone. And the next day, December 23rd, 1986, it all happened again. But I went to the same point. I got to see my past lives. I had this angel of light tell me that it showed, you know, in the near-death experience when people see the gray walls of the tunnel?
Yeah, well, a lot of them just describe the light, not a lot describe the tunnel, but tell
us. Well, what happened, they showed me hundreds of thousands of souls in these silvery gray cocoons that some of them had little openings of light in them, which is what they, when they're going through the tunnel, that's what they're actually seeing. And I could see that the knowledge of good and evil, the polarity matrix, and you'll see this in the film The Voice, the way I did the incredible animated graphics of this, was so strong that they were not ready to break free and go into the non-dual state of the light. And as I approached them, they started to shake violently, the same kind of vastation that I felt before I had my experience. Well, anyway, what happens is I come back, and I want to tell others. I start going to meetings at the International Association for Near-Death Studies in Los Angeles for years, and I'm searching for the answer for this experience. I mean, does anybody know where I was? Has it happened to anybody else? And sure enough, there are many people that have gone through a number of these heavens. But when I get to India in 1996, I find the most precious and one of the most valuable sutras in Buddhism, in Mahayana Buddhism, which is Tibetan Buddhism, called the Lankavatara Sutra. And the Lankavatara Sutra gives me my answer. Buddha tells us that in all of his previous incarnations, he said there are many yogis, including himself, who attain up to the sixth. And he said those samadhis are so blissful, some yogis get stuck in them for years, thousands of years, because he said for them it is their nirvana, it is their freedom, and they will tell their disciples that they're fully realized. But he said 1 through 6 are impermanent, meaning they're not permanent realization. You can go in that state and come out. The only one that starts to be permanent is the seventh, which I never crossed. And Buddha says that is nirvana. And the nirvana, that's only the first nirvana. There's actually three of them. And he says in this sutra that in order to go from the sixth to the seventh, and when Buddha was born as Prince Siddhartha, he was born having attained up to the sixth in previous lifetimes. He said you have to come out of your bliss, what even Robert Thurman, we interviewed Robert Thurman in The Voice, and he talks about this. He talks about how easy it is when you die to go into the samadhis, the super bliss states. But he said eventually you get bored of them. And you get bored of them because your soul knows that eventually there's something way beyond even this, which is, for me, it's like hard to believe. Oh, my God, the bliss in the sixth was out of this universe. I mean, it's the most unimaginable cosmic ecstasy. And to think that the seventh is a million times greater than that, oh, my God. And that's just the beginning of what happens when a person attains nirvana. They reach the seventh, and their aura, that it just apparently continuously expands throughout the universe. It never stops getting bigger. And the difference between a human being, a normal human being, is our auras are just a few feet beyond our body. What keeps them only a few feet beyond the body is the polarity matrix, the knowledge of good and evil, the inner conflict. The inner conflict is happening with all seven of our energy centers, and it's wasting all of our spiritual energy. We can see the inner conflict operating all the time. It's happening all day long on many different decisions and many different levels of our being. And what happens is when you start to go into deeper realization of meditation is you see the conflict and you start giving it less and less of your energy. When Jesus says, if thine eye be single in Matthew 6:22, thy whole body it will be filled with light, what he means is that when you end this inner conflict inside of yourself, you attain true peace. And there is no good and evil for you. That's the illusion that keeps you in the polarity matrix and keeps you
but
going.
not a lot of people get to that level, David, do
they? No. I'm saying this is for the inspiration here is that these states are attainable for the common householder if you really study this. If you see the film The Voice, you will get a very clear 2.5-hour film that will show you step by step how this is possible. I'm not living in a cave in India. I'm not living in a monastery. I'm living an ordinary life. I'm a married man, and I meditate every day.
And what do you mean by meditate? What do you do?
Meditation, I mean, is when I was first taught meditation from masters from India, there were a lot of errors in the translation to English that were quite damaging, I thought. After years of practice, I've designed a series of meditation CDs, which I have on the website. They're only $5 each. I'm making them really cheap for people. So I strip all of the verbiage of, you know, Hinduism and Buddhism and just keep it in plain English. This is, regardless of your religion, you can still practice any religion you want. Just when you practice meditation, you can really start to have these experiences.
All right. Stay with us, David. We're going to come right back at the top of the hour. We'll open up phone lines soon as well on Coast to Coast AM.